Welcome back to Cargumentative, a show where vigorous men, puckering from excessive sourworm consumption, talk about cars, motors, and all things automotive. I'm Thomas Faulkner, back from the Sunday Times.
Oh, I'm Mark Paluta. Thanks for having us back, Tom.
I'm Mike Salomon, and welcome back, Tom. We missed you.
Oh, that's what you say.
No, we really did.
Mm. Yeah, it just wasn't the same without you.
Not even close.
That's good to hear. Nadav?
No, I'm Nadav Ravid. We're glad to have you back. I won't need to impersonate you today. Yeah, we have good. The real deal, everyone. The professional is back.
Preferred professional. Yeah, there we go. Getting all tongue-tied tonight. So as we all know, this is the news section of the show, and I've just got to start this off because it makes me excited. And it's not going to make you excited. So that's why it's so cool.
Toyota related.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Ah, jeez, like.
Earlier this week, I went for lunch with Toyota, and they used that lunch to unveil the new Toyota Prius.
Creak, creak.
Very cool. So, like, you know, the Mark III Toyota Prius, which was kind of quite aggressive in the front and had those weird lights in the back?
Mm-hmm. Hold. There's only been one version.
Yeah, they've only ever made one Prius. Yeah. I actually went for a drive-in one.
They haven't,
as an Uber.
I was once in a taxi one.
Yeah, this is the fourth generation.
No, it's not
facelift.
It's the same one.
It's not the same one.
Wait,
it's not.
What was the one? No.
What have they changed?
The fourth generation came out in 2015, and it had those weird lights at the back, which everybody
hated.
Yes,
that's what it still has.
No, it doesn't. They've now gone horizontal.
Oh, wow.
So they've moved from being angled.
Yes, they've really moved it on, huh?
Yeah.
I know someone who owns a Prius.
I would own a Prius.
How can you be friends with someone who owns a Prius?
He's a good man. He's an old mentor of mine. He's getting on.
Did he buy it because he's like wants to do it in like the Californian I'm saving the planet?
I think so. He's got a bit of an eco bent on him. Remarkably, he doesn't actual commute from sort of Auckland Park to Sandton.
Mm-hmm.
He gets 2.8 to 3.1 liters per 100
kilometers. Incredible.
Yeah, but
in real world, he actually does.
The problem with the Prius is when people went and actually analyzed a Prius and said, what is the carbon footprint of this car to get it to the point that it's now economical?
Yeah.
The batteries are manufactured, where was it, Canada? The car's manufactured in Japan.
Yep.
The shipping of the parts to get them.
You're opening up a can of worms.
No, that's really true of all electric cars. But I think
not necessarily.
There a test on a rival TV show?
Rival
to us.
We will not mention the name.
Yeah.
They are our rivals.
It was an M3 against the Prius.
And the thing is that when you're pressing on, so if you're going to drive it, and I suspect he's using part throttle to keep it in electric mode. If you actually get it into petrol mode, it ends up being like similar fuel economy to a normal car.
Because it's still heavy, and you still have to push it quite a bit with its little motor to get it to go anywhere.
All I can say is that when I went to Opikopi for the first time in my life, when I was in my band, back in the reckless days.
And you were a musician.
Yeah, I took the Prius to Opikopi.
I thought you were a drummer.
I hang out with musicians. Yeah, very funny. And I think I averaged like 5.8. 5.8 so then back. It's not bad.
5.8. I mean, so you save what? 3? And you hate yourself.
I didn't hate it. I thought it was cool. And there was something quite nice about going to a rock festival in a Prius.
There was actually a Prius parked outside my house this evening. When I got him. Can't say I didn't spit on it.
If Larry David can drive a Prius, then I can drive a Prius.
He upgraded to an i3, though.
Did he?
To be fair.
In the new episode.
Yeah.
New season.
Mm-hmm.
Sell out. So I was away in Cape Town, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to Cape Town to drive the new Porsche Macan.
Oh.
There you go. You like that?
Yeah.
The base model.
The 2-liter base model. Which
I actually have a real problem with that.
Why?
I have a problem with all Porsches that aren't sports cars.
Mm.
Okay.
But you just have to. It's a necessary evil in this day and age. You can't just say, I'm going to make sports cars because that's all.
The problem I have with it is a Porsche used to be aspirational.
You
worked hard to want to drive and buy a Porsche.
But we still do.
No. Yeah.
Nadav does.
Mike Everyone does. Drives a Porsche now.
Because they're so good.
Yeah. Yeah. They are good.
But X-Class, I mean, what is that the base one that's like 750 grand?
The McCann?
Yeah.
This is 849. So just to give you some context in pricing, starts at, that's 849 for a base spec 2-liter four cylinder McCann.
What doesn't it have?
So it's a McCann GTR.
It's basically a McCann. I mean, Porsche don't say it's got the same engine, but you know it's the same engine. It has its own head and its own software, etc.
What doesn't it have for 849? I mean, could you realistically order one at 849?
Yeah, it's got. So what they did is they've updated. They've done some minor cosmetic tweaks on the exterior, and inside you've got a better interior. They've got that nice big PCM screen, that big HD screen that's inside the Panamera. Very nice.
Yeah.
Everything that you want
is a touchscreen.
It is touchscreen, but what?
Everything's touchscreen. That's terrible.
But then
why?
Because when you're driving, a touchscreen is impractical.
Yeah, but you can still control it with the steering wheel controls as well.
Yeah, what if you want to change the climate control?
You do it so you can do it on the center console.
On a touchscreen?
Yes. No. Does it have
buttons for climate?
So unlike the Panamera, which has that new glass haptic feedback thing, the McCann still has the old school analog switchgear.
Well, I like this.
So
that's
kind of it's actually quite cool because you've got new age here and you've got.
You and I both agree on that. So if you say it's okay,
but what are we saying? Are we saying that it's okay now to have a McCann with a GTI engine? So what are we saying? It's a Volkswagen.
Well,
it's a Volkswagen. Is that okay?
What would it weigh?
It can't
be light. It's got to be 2 tons.
1900.
Yeah, it's around about the. You can feel it. You need to rev this car more than you would if it was.
A that's
GTI.
Not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, but it does everything very well. I mean, the McCann's always been a fantastic SUV.
Is it four-wheel drive or front-wheel drive?
It's all-wheel drive, but it has a nice rear-wheel drive bias to it when you start getting into
it. Did you give it a little bit through the corners?
It's basically a Golf R.
Yeah, I did.
How come we weren't invited?
Probably uses a Golf R drivetrain.
We drove one of those. It's very good.
Mm. So we can say we've driven the new McCann.
Wow. Well, what else they'll put that
we've
engine.
Driven a lightweight McCann.
Just to give you some pricing context.
Yeah.
849. It's only about 12 grand more than the equivalent Stelvio, and it is about 70 something thousand rand cheaper than the equivalent F-Pace.
Oh, okay. So
it's well priced.
It's well priced. It's competitively priced.
Why would I not buy the previous generation though?
Because it's still very new. How long has it been out?
Yeah. They haven't done.
I do prefer the rear of the old one. I don't like the fact that they've made the lights more Panamera Cayenne.
Well, they've got the light bar going through, which is nice.
I like the old
one. So, Tom, is this an all new model or is this a facelift?
No, it's just a facelift.
In its price category, I'm not sure that there's anything I'd take over and above.
Well, honestly, why would you have that over a Golf
or an Evoque?
Because it's a Porsche.
Oh, because it's a Porsche.
You're getting a Porsche.
It's a Golf. Underneath, it's a VW
Porsche.
Product.
I know, but it says Porsche.
It's actually a previous generation.
Does it have more space than a Golf?
Yes.
Inside?
Yeah.
Yes. You sure?
Yes.
Yep.
No. It's a previous generation Q5 platform shell with, sounds like, Golf R mechanicals.
Mm.
Interesting.
Oh, it does sound
so
like
that. The mix and match, VW famous for it.
You want to talk Golf?
Yeah.
Mm.
Rumor mill says that Volkswagen is working on a Golf R Plus, rumored to be 300 kilowatts.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's a lot of kilowatts.
What do you think about that?
I like that.
You like that?
Where will it end?
Like a Golf.
Probably be about $1 million.
We drove a Golf R actually last week.
It's an annoyingly good car.
Fantastic.
Does everything.
So you two got together to go and drive a Golf R?
No, it was parked, yeah. We had it brought to us.
Oh, I do recall that.
Mm. It was lovely.
I should have driven that.
Hmm.
Do you want to hear something?
You couldn't. You had to go.
Where to?
It was
worth it.
Good one. Something that sounds awful, which not even I would do. A Dutchman, actually, from Holland, decided that he was going to do the world's longest journey in an EV, electric vehicle. So he decided to go from the Netherlands to Sydney, and he had to recharge his car every 200 kilometers. Do you know how long this whole thing took?
That's painful.
It took
2 years.
It took just over 3 years.
Oh just over
like
3 years.
Why would you want to do such a thing?
Oh, my God, that's painful.
Why would you want to do such
a
thing?
So it charged it every 200K for a day.
Yeah. And he was going about how if he did this in a petrol car, he would have had to spend something like, I don't know, I think it was like 4,000 euros worth of petrol or something.
Someone should have just given him cash.
But I was like, done it in a month.
Yeah, exactly, in a month. So how much, you know, I mean, the time versus money curve.
How much of the time was it charging?
I'm just interested. Very interesting.
And how much more money did he spend on hotels waiting for his car to charge?
But I mean, and food and
Well, he's using other people's electricity.
Yeah. I mean,
he's like, can I plug in my cell phone?
He went.
Honey, do you mind if I just borrow your plug? Next thing, like electricity bills into the roof.
It's just such a ridiculous thing.
It is. If he'd waited a year, it would have been half the time.
And apparently he went through the Australian outback. And jeez. Where do you get power out in the outback?
You have to have a power station drive up next to you.
Yeah, one monstrously long extension cord.
Or a nice solar panel on the roof.
Yeah, sure.
That sounds like a man with way too much time on his
hands. He had 3 years to do that.
Clearly a Dutch man.
What exactly was he doing while it was charging?
I don't know, reading a book. There. What do Dutch people do in their spare time?
Ride bicycles.
Grow flowers.
Wear clogs.
Make salty licorice.
Smoke.
Or participate in interesting shows.
Smoke.
That's true.
and have a smoke and a cray. Yeah.
Stop generalizing
I'm
Dutch people.
I'm from Holland, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So I have a lot of colleagues in the motoring
Aren't
industry.
Are you from Holland, Mark?
I am indeed.
Okay, moving on from that.
Okay.
Enough stereotyping. I'm going to get in trouble. I have lots of colleagues in the South African motoring journalism game. Okay, and they belong to something called Car of the Year. Mm-hmm. Do you know which car won this year?
I'm going to say
Volvo.
Julia?
No.
Honda Civic Type R.
Should have, but didn't.
It won the hot hatch category.
I think it was
something.
A Porsche.
Mm-mm. No, last year was a Porsche. Last was it 2 years ago?
Last 3 years was a Porsche.
Must have put you out your misery. Collective
Please.
Misery.
Please.
They decided to go with the Mercedes-Benz A-Class.
Oh, which looks really? Like a nice car.
No. I'm very against this new A-Class.
Why? It's better than the last
one. Looks-wise, the last one had a beautiful proportion to it. The rear windows were too small, which made it have a nice, like a nice stance to it. The new one just looks, it's basically like a 1 Series. I don't know.
It's much better to drive.
I quite like the new one.
The old one was like the interior. Abysmal.
Interior is amazing.
No, but you're like obsessed with Mercs.
I am kind
not
of.
Really
a good cars.
Impartial.
Diesel ones.
So that's so yeah. The
okay,
A-class
so congratulations to Mercedes for the car of the year.
It should have been the Civic.
Yeah, we'd love to drive one.
So what were the other categories? Because there was more than just the outright winner.
No, there's not. This is the only car competition in the world where
there's one category.
There's one category.
That's ridiculous.
And it can be anything. It can be a Prius versus a diesel versus a hot hatch versus.
Well, literally have an A-class up against a 488 Pista.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a Porsche in the mix.
I, for one, actually, am a little bit embarrassed that I didn't know that this had happened. Because, I mean, like, we
You're
are journalists
guy.
And car guys. Yeah. But I'm thinking maybe we should start our own awards.
That's what I was going to say. With actual categories. So here's the thing. We can have a hot hatch award. We can have a performance sedan. We can have the best SUV. We can have...
Fantastic. Best engine.
Best engine. We should have the 2019 Cargumentative... Car awards.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Done.
Can should our listeners submit their nominations?
Well, perhaps? they should maybe submit categories.
Mm-hmm. Can we not?
What kind of categories do they think we should be judging?
Can we not get readers to submit their cars and we'll put them in and we can judge which one we think is the coolest?
That's actually quite
maybe.
Cool.
We can have like that.
Let's do that.
Well, we can have that in the used car section.
Hmm.
Then we can have new cars.
Okay.
SUVs.
We'll work out the nitty gritty. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds good.
For so a show to come.
We're going to work on that. But before we do, we're going to have a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to save or slaughter a motoring sacred car.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website.
Or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back to Car Argumentative. guys, this is our first segment of Sacred Cow.
Sacred Cow. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
So a sacred cow, you know, in the motoring world, basically, it's referring to an icon, something famous, something that everybody knows. Everybody,
because certain religions have sacred cows.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. You see.
A bit slow. Huh? Okay, I got it.
Yeah, it's pretty good, huh?
So the car,
but it often transcends. It's so big that it transcends the automotive world. It's something
it transcends
iconic.
Itself.
It's something that, you know, non-motoring people, lay people know it's gone into. Okay. It's a big deal, an icon.
It's an icon. So
what is the first one?
So the first icon is the Volkswagen Beetle.
Oh,
God.
And everybody here grunts.
Mm. Why? No, not at all.
What an absolute disaster of a car.
But why?
Can I just say that as people who like cars beginning with P.
Let me just say that they have nothing to do with each other. Besides,
they do.
A bit of history.
I just want to ask a quick question, and I'm asking this in all seriousness because I've never been in a 356.
I have.
Is a 356 a Beetle?
It feels very much like a Beetle. I've driven a Beetle. I've driven a 356. They feel pretty much exactly the same in terms of power.
Okay, so if I've driven a Beetle, I've driven a 356.
The Beetle had a better seating position. It was more comfortable. The gearbox was better. The brakes were actually better.
The gearbox was better because actually I'd say that's probably the worst part of a Beetle.
Well, in the 356 I drove, it was not good.
And the suspension the same?
Yeah, I think that.
Torsion bars.
Yeah, torsion bars.
Torsion bars. But no, the components aren't shared. And I think, to be fair, most of the 356s we drive maybe early 60s cars.
Mm.
Some of the Beetles we drive might have been 70s and 80s cars.
Yeah.
So it's not totally comparable.
Well, one of the things I know that is definitely different is a 356 has a monocoque body chassis.
That's true.
And a Beetle has a floor pan with a
big
body
difference
on top.
Yeah.
So it's more wobbly.
Mm.
Mm.
It's true.
Mm. So, but I mean, does it matter at 12 k's an hour?
No, it doesn't.
Well, okay. So let's talk about do any of us actually have any history with Beetles?
My family had some. You know, I mean, my uncle and my aunt had one, and then they looked after one for a friend who lives in Hamburg and used to come out to their farm every year. And I got to drive that car eventually. I was like, listen, I really want to know what these cars are about.
But don't we need to introduce the Beetle as the sacred cow?
So tell us why. Know? Why is it so amazing? So, what do people love about it?
Well, they made 21 million, I think, of them.
Wasn't it the most produced car?
I think it's the most produced car of all time.
For the longest period as well.
Yeah.
From the 50s to the
2000s.
No, 2000s. They made them in Mexico.
When did they start making them? 40s.
Technically,
straight after World War II.
Didn't they actually make a prototype before?
During World War II.
Like 39.
Yeah. Okay, so, and then all the way to the 2000s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Brazil, is that right?
Brazil, correct.
Mexico. Sorry, not Mexico.
Mexico.
Oh, Mexico.
Was it Mexico?
I'm not sure. Right. Maybe it was both. Maybe it was both.
Yeah, okay. The summer van was in Brazil, but that's for another discussion.
No, it was the factories in Puebla, Mexico.
I actually drove one of the last Beetles to ever come off the production
line. Oh, wow.
Yeah, at the launch of the new Beetle.
Unlucky you.
Hmm. No, that car was fantastic. That car had air conditioning.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It had air conditioning, I remember.
Did the aircon work at the same time as the engine? Could you do both at the same time?
Yeah, I think you could, but I was in Berlin, so I didn't really have to have it on. Very cool car. But so the Beetle is just famous because it's this car that's been around for as long as anybody cares to remember. It's been in movies, Herbie.
So officially they made it from 1938 to 2003. And it says Brazil.
Mm. Yeah, sounds about right.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's completely timeless. Even today, there are custom Beetles driving around. There are still you'll see probably at least once a week, you'll see a Beetle driving around. It's instantly recognizable. And, I mean, there's something cool about them. I grew up with one, and it's an interesting story that we came from Zim in 82. My late mother had a 61 Beetle, which was quite cool because it was the last one that didn't have a fuel gauge. So when you would run out of fuel, you'd feel the car starting to stutter and you'd have to kick it over to a reserve tank. And about 15 years ago, that car had been sitting in our driveway and it was, the floor pan was rotting, and I mean, those things weren't galvanized. And actually, I gave it away. and
I
gave it away, yeah. And I actually put a notice on a Facebook air-cooled site in South Africa asking if anyone has seen that car, because I'd like to buy it back and I'd restore it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a car that's worth restoring.
I read a bit further, and the last one was actually produced in Mexico. Nadav wins.
And me. I said Mexico first.
And you. All right.
But it is. I mean, it is that. It's an iconic car. It's up there with the Mini. And
well, it's also it was very affordable. So they were cheap as chips. So students used to drive them. They were popular with like that era, that age of person. Well, so
I think it's always
18 to 25 year olds.
It's always been popular with people who wanted a simple car that was easy to fix. I mean, it's not it's not a hugely complicated car.
No, it's hard to break.
It's very hard to break.
Apparently, the easiest car to learn how to fix. But also, there's some very cool variants, like an SP.
Oh, the SP.
What is the SP?
So the SP was basically like a 1600S, but it had dual carbs.
A carb per bank. Call it that, yeah.
It had a rev counter which went all the way up to 4,500.
Was it a diesel?
No, but that's how high they rev. It's just, you know.
Okay, so.
And beach buggies? And what about a Baja bug?
Yeah,
Baja
so there were lots of. Awesome. Yeah, those were cool, I suppose. I mean, they like bred other things.
Yeah, you take the fenders off, it just looks cool.
But I want to know why.
So that's why they were the sacred cows, because, I don't know, I suppose.
Well, they just are.
People that really didn't care about cars loved them. But they didn't have to. They wanted transport.
But
it was all about transport.
But would you say that a sacred cow is one that is iconic but actually is shit to drive?
Yeah, because that
would be the whole point of this thing.
Yeah, it looks like this is. Because I don't believe these things are great to drive. But they got you from home to varsity. Or
from here to
Cape
Town.
Or to the jaw. Or wherever you wanted to go, yeah. So that's what made them important, I suppose.
Why don't you? I'm being stared at by Nadav.
Well, the whole thing is
can
it's
shoot. Can you feel the heat?
Volkswagen is a people's car.
Yeah,
and that's what it was about.
No, so I mean, the Beetle has been iconic for different reasons for more than one generation. That's what's so interesting about it. I think is it you know, initially it came out of the ashes of World War II. Beetle production was restarted in Germany. It brought Germany enormous amount of income. It was a popular car. It did. It was designed to mobilize the masses under the Nazi regime, under Hitler, and it ended up mobilizing the masses in any case when it was actually reinstated by the Americans. It then became an icon for the following generation in the 60s. So it turned the fascist roots on their head. And started representing freedom and freedom of choice, and it's iconic in many different ways for many different people for many different generations. And the truth, and I get that, and that's not going to change. It's always going to be an icon. That's already a fact. Question is, should it be? And my opinion is, having driven it, it's truly awful. I don't know. It was terribly agricultural. It was terribly slow. I didn't think it was easy to live with, easy
so many
to drive.
Cars of that era that
so it's
were
probably
like
the
that.
Same as
no,
like a Fiat 500.
Yeah,
it's a terrible look at Mark's bus.
Okay, but if you've ever driven a so I'm talking about a Mark's bus.
Do you remember that VW ad where the father passes the keys to his son? I think it was a yellow one. Huh?
It was a yellow one. Yeah,
oh, that was pretty cool.
It pulls at the heartstrings.
It
there's
does.
There's all
That's
kinds
what
of there's a lot of emotion associated, and it's transcended the fact that it's an automobile alone. But if we bring it back to its automobile roots. It's this awful, low-revving, noisy, flat four. It doesn't have any power. It's upright seating position. It's horrible to drive. And if you compare it, you know, maybe it was something special and unique when it was released in the late 30s, early 40s. But by the time the 60s came around, with something like the Mini, to compare it to a Mini, almost there's no comparison. No, to drive a Mini,
but the Mini
is still modern to drive.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, the Mini was like 20 years newer. And it was
different
tech.
So maybe it was time for the Beetle to have its day, and it never did.
Sure.
But you still see more Beetles roaming around the streets than you do Minis.
Also
true. But that's only because people, when they get off the road, they just put their Mini in their bag and go inside.
No, but yeah, that comes down to build quality and simplicity, yeah. The Mini was actually a complex thing.
Yeah.
It was very good.
It was.
But
it
can be difficult to maintain.
But, I mean, I think we've talked about the Beetle for a fair amount of time. Let's talk about a poll here quickly. All those
are you ready for the IT people to make a new poll for us for next
well,
week?
Well, yes, but let's just see what our what this little room is thinking. Right. I'm for the Beetle.
I'm totally for the I'm not taking out my axe.
Yeah, you know it's what? You've kind of swayed me. I think as a mode of transportation that that's cheap and easy to maintain, I'm for it. As a car, I'm not.
But they're cool.
But I'll be for it because of that.
Yeah, I'm going to stay against it. There's lots of other cars like Renaults and Minis and things that might have superseded it or been compatriots at the time that were perhaps better or even more innovative or innovative in a different way. It's never going to stop being an icon, and the world will be poorer for it not having existed. But is it a good thing to drive in 2019? Maybe don't visit your heroes. That would be my advice.
So for the poll, visit our Instagram page at Cargumentative. Tom, it's going to be on the website as well.
Yeah, we'll post it.
And for the hate mail, it's at NBR911.
gmail.com.
Send all your air-cooled hate towards me.
Guys, so there we go. First sacred car, and it lives. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have another argument.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amrao, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a chef.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment, we're going to chat about a little thing known as patina. Mm. And you're a words man.
I'm not a words man.
Well, you like to think you're a words man.
So I must not define it, what I think it means.
That's right, Mark Paluda. Tell everybody out there what patina is.
I think patina is wear.
Yeah.
So it's like, imagine an old leather couch that shows all its creases and wear marks and...
an old haggard face.
Yo, and it's better for it. So it's the way, it's like the jeans we wear now with like the faded patches that haven't gone away.
That's a good analogy.
Everyone has that now.
Yeah, so
it started about 10 years ago and never went out of fashion.
Mm.
So those are like patina jeans. They used
These
to
are
be
patina.
They used to be plain blue and now they've got like lighter blue.
I call it the marks of age.
The marks of age. I like that.
Like wrinkles.
I like it.
But there's the controversy about patina is that everybody has a different definition for where patina stops and just plain haggard wear begins.
Exactly.
You know? So that couch example is a great one.
Yeah, because we're talking about, it's obviously, it refers to cars in this instance. And so when is it awesome and when is it time to have a respray? Mm.
Well, let's just talk about it in the context of the classic car market. So what's become very... very
sought after. What desired?
Desired is preservation stuff rather than restoration stuff, and it's starting to become a little bit contrived, in my opinion. So what you'll do is now the buzzword is a barn find. So finding a car that's unrestored and it's been sitting in a barn for 20 years, and they take it to auction without even cleaning the dust off it.
Or the pigeon shit that's
That's
ridiculous.
The pigeon shit and the dust and somehow, because it has that on it, it's considered a little bit more valuable. And, I mean, I just simply don't get it.
So they considered a time warp. So someone put it away in the 70s and no one has touched it since. And now it's in its original state, but it's unusable. So it's an absolute waste.
Yeah, because as soon as you go over 100, all that dust's going to blow off. And all the feathers are going to come out of the...
If you want to open the door, you're going to get rid of all the dust.
So the one end of patina is maybe the barn find. And then the other end is obviously the full restoration.
Absolutely. So let's call it the over-restored car.
The over-restored car. So you take a car that's running, that's presentable, that has all its bits and pieces, but shows a life of
neglect.
No, not of neglect, of care.
Yeah.
So it's made, it's a 50-year-old car, but it's made it this far with all its bits intact and its dignity, and it tells a story, and there's the marks on the seats and the leather's creased, and so, you take all that away when you restore it back to new, and I think that that's a shame. You've lost a story there.
So I've got an interesting story about this, and it relates to a car that I restored myself.
You mean the Alpha was green.
The Alpha that was green.
It was red, for
example. So you guys always bring this up. So when I bought that car, I found it in a barn, in a garage, covered in dust and chicken, pigeon poo.
Guano.
And I considered just cleaning it and keeping it the way it was. The problem is it had had a really bad respray in its life. So what do you do? Now you're faced with, do I strip it back and take it to its original color, or do I just leave it and live with it and really not like it a lot? So I chose the former.
Well, I mean...
It has to be preserved. It has to be original and preserved and looked after. Original being the operative word, yeah. You have to keep it nice. As soon as it shows neglect, I think it's terrible. Exactly. You don't want to live with it.
So, like, if you're picking up a classic car, you want something that still has its original paint, that hasn't, you know, been resprayed somewhere along the line badly, and now you've got, like,
Mark's 308
coming off.
Your 308.
No, it's been resprayed.
Has it?
Well, it's been resprayed in, it's had blowover, basically.
But if you look at the switch gear and everything, it shows it's had a life, a good life.
Yes, it has.
It's been looked after. Yeah. And it's been enjoyed.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
I think Diablo's probably the closest. That hasn't had a respray. The seats are starting to show a little bit of sign of wear. And funny enough, I don't want to restore for the reason that I think once you've got it too perfect, you don't want to use it. But then also, this over-restoration thing, I think that it doesn't look right, you know.
Well, also they never built them that well. Absolutely. In the factories in those days.
So what I do think, what I do like is some cars, it needs a respray. So, you know, the 911 E, the orange car needs a respray at some point in time, and then we'll do it. But what's going to be important to me is to develop some patina after that. So not keep it perfect. Let it become patinated.
Well, that's the thing. Like, people say, don't respray your car because then you've lost. But then
I disagree with that completely.
By respraying it, you allowing yourself a clean sheet of paper to make your own story.
Look, so you get spray jobs and spray jobs. Huh? It's very important that if you're going to have something resprayed, that you have it done properly. That really is something that it's very hard to go back.
What did you just say?
Yeah, what did you just
say? If you want it done properly.
Yes.
But you've told me that it was done
properly.
I'm
shocked. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I wish you would practice what you preached.
So I restored
people
my car.
People are listening to you.
Listen to me.
Hypocrisy.
Now, you see, I had a car resprayed at no expense spared once upon a time.
What car was it?
An Alpha Spider.
Yeah, no expenses.
And
the wrong color. They got that wrong.
I can tell you I'm not happy with it at all. Lesson learned. And I don't want to use the thing. Because I'm too scared of it being scratched, and
but then you're creating your own story. You're creating that patina. It's like you went back in time and you purchased that car back in the day, and now you're using that now, and you're creating your own. You know,
question?
Yes.
Do scratches count as patina? Because I don't think they do. I think actually what you're looking for is like wear.
Like,
so it's sort
like
of
sun damage.
It's subtle.
Takes so
like
long.
You can know it's on the paint. I think it's hard to explain like what you're looking for, but you definitely don't want scratches. That literally is irritating as hell.
Well,
but,
I mean, here's a good example. I always think of this as an example of patina. If you've got a tread plate, so you know you open the door and on the door sill. There's often the car manufacturer's name, and it's often there in some or other form. It's painted or it's put in a piece of plastic or something. And on the driver's side, as the driver climbs in and out over the course of 20, 30, 40, 50 years, a sort of a wear line appears in the middle of that of that tread plate there. And that's patina. So that tells you about every single time someone's climbed in and out and had a good time or a bad time. And,
yeah, that's cool. I like that.
You
yeah.
can see that in the wear. And it doesn't detract from the car and it doesn't detract from the drive. And that's something I like to see. But we've been using this term, we've been throwing it around called neglect. And I think the big problem is that everybody's definition of either patina or neglect differs. So we know that Thomas's definition of patina is, you know, if it's got, you know, a slight pockmark in the left-sided mirror, whereas, you know, our definition of patina is, well, you know, so 50 years of good living, you know. So everyone's definition
also
differs.
We've got to remember that a car, let's use your 308 as an example. When it started off its life, it was the best Ferrari. Well, the newest, greatest Ferrari.
It was like going out now and buying a
488.
Exactly.
Yeah, so people loved it and they cleaned it every day. Scooter, yeah. But then when it was 20 years old, it was the 20-year-old Ferrari.
Yeah,
it was and like, it went through a life of being left outside and no one really washed it, maybe.
So you just described the last 13 years with me.
And we'll then, service. And then it starts coming into its own again and someone starts loving it again and looking after it. So it goes, all of these cars, I had my white 911 was left out in the sun for many years at some point in its life. And I had to redo bits of it to get it back to what it is now.
I saw it before it got sprayed.
Exactly.
Remember,
certainly the best bit of patina I've seen is on a Merc SLS. It's a silver one. I saw it at the Festival of Motoring. It's a very high mileage car. It's got like nearly 100,000 Ks. Mm-hmm. But the guy does stupid speeds on
all the
long
time.
Journeys.
Yeah.
And his headlights are so... They're clouded over from... They're basically sandblasted. The front number plate is basically like...
Illegible.
It has virtually no paint on it. And I love that. I absolutely love it.
Good car.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
That is great.
Because it doesn't take much to actually fix that.
No, you just get...
But it takes years of driving to get it to that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like getting a husky voice, you know. You've got to do whiskey and smoke for a long time.
Exactly.
Sleep a lot. You know, you've got to earn it, you know.
Yeah.
It's rock and roll, man.
It is.
Yeah.
So in closing, patina.
Yeah, I think there are varying depths of patina. Mm. And I think if it's honest wear on something that's well looked after over many years, it's cool.
And it's worth keeping if it is.
Yeah, sure, but if it's too far gone and you can't enjoy it anymore and it's ugly, it's also a personal thing. So. Yeah.
And it gives you a chance to start afresh and create your own story.
But the biggest thing is you can never get it back once you've taken it away.
Mm. Mm. You can't.
That's right.
But there's always another chance to make some more.
Exactly.
Make your stories, guys.
And that's the nice thing about these cars that we own is that we can just keep reinventing them.
Mm.
They get old and worn out and you go and buy new parts, put them on, start again.
Like Mike's bus.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Mike's bus. The subject of another show.
Yeah.
A whole show.
Well, we continue to chuckle heartily at Mike's bus. We're going to take a quick break and return to answer some questions.
Cool.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, we've got some good news here. A real listener actually mailed us.
What?
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
No.
Yeah.
I just want to note, like, when people interact with us like and say we like Argumentative or they ask questions and stuff, we seriously love it.
We do. We do love it. So
it's hard to believe.
It's
people
so awesome.
Listen.
And he's international.
Oh! So
Nick the Car Guy says, I'm now based in London and get to work via public transport. Why not? It works.
Mm.
Debating whether to get a car for the odd use by my wife in the week, as we have a nine-week-old.
Assuming a baby.
Must be a baby.
Possibly.
Would be a cat
human.
Or a dog.
Cat.
Looking to buy something that will hold its value, appreciate from about £20,000.
Which is about 400 grand.
400,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I have narrowed it down to a B7 RS4 Avant. So a B7 RS4 Avant
is an Audi.
Is the Audi
A4.
Correct.
What year is that?
B7's were
2006-ish.
Yeah, around about there.
Okay, so that's the one after the one I like.
No, it's the one you like.
Is it the one I like?
Ooh.
It's the one that came out of the V8. Like, manual V8
with just a sport awesome button sound on the wheel. That's all.
There was same engine as the RDT, the
R8.
So anyway, he says, I have narrowed it down to a B7 RS4 Avant or a Porsche 996 C4S with a Thule box on the roof.
I thought we weren't going to mention 911s.
Laughing at Multicon.
Someone else.
Okay, someone else did.
It would be great to hear what you guys think, and if you have any other suggestions.
So I think the important thing is that in the UK, £20,000 like goes quite far.
It's a lot of car.
No, I'm saying like there's a lot of options there. I mean, just as an interesting option, Paul, our friend, he actually put out to the Cars and Coffee group recently saying £20,000, Bentley Continental GT.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's not the question. I think we should stick to this, but in the UK, there's a lot of.
Well, £20,000 seems like a lot for a B7 RS4, because aren't they like 250 grand cars here?
Mm. You'd have to find a good one, and a good one Avant would be about 400, and you'd have to find the Avant first.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. I like both those cars. I really do, and I think they both could work with a 9 week.
A nine week old,
and a wifey.
Debating whether to get a car for the odd use by my wife in the week as we have a 9 week old.
So odd use by the wife, and then I'm assuming his more use on the weekend. So which would be
a nice
weekend.
He wants to be able to enjoy it as well. You know, I understand that.
You've got this exact same problem. This man, Nick the car guy, are you sure it's not you?
I actually sent this in, you know. I kind of changed a few of the details.
Just use pounds instead of clever. I like that.
So I don't have a 9 week old anymore. She's almost two, but... There's still issues related to carrying a child and needing the flexibility to put her in safely. So I understand his concern, but you also don't want to, you know, you don't want to have to sell out completely. You want to have your cake and eat it. You want to be able to transport the kid safely, but still have fun if you take the car out for a night drive or a weekend.
They live in London, right? Yeah.
That's what you
said. So they're going to have to park it in the street.
Yeah,
which is fine for both of them. I mean, they're both modern cars. But here's the thing. So they're both phenomenal cars. But
good choices.
Really good choices. But the one is for all three of them plus a bit of kit, whereas the other is two of them.
And
a Thule box to put a pram in is probably challenging.
Our friend Jacques puts a car seat in the back of his 997.
There's no reason why the three of them can't go in the 911.
It's just, where would you put the pram?
In the frunk?
Yeah, or you could, if you get small ones. You've got one that'll fit in your frunk.
Listen, I've done it. So it's obviously
you put
less.
A pram in the frunk?
Yeah, not in the frunk, modern. No. But the three of us plus the pram and the baby clobber can all go in a 911.
Can't you just get the wife to wear one of those things?
But then wifey's
don't always need it. So the use of a pram, we don't actually use a pram for a very long time. So now that you're 9 weeks old, you feel like the kid's married to its pram, but that won't last very long.
No, that's where you're wrong. You'll move on to a stroller, which is a lot easier.
No, but a stroller will fit in the frunk. Anyway, I would go with the RS4. Because it's more practical, it sounds better. I think it's cooler.
I think it's cooler as well.
Mm. Fantastic.
If it was the sedan, if the question was the sedan or the 996, I'd go for the 996.
No, I'd still go with the sedan. Well, personally.
An
Avant is cool.
Yeah, Avant's amazing.
I think the interior of that Audi is actually quite a little bit nicer than the 996 generation. Yeah.
I drove one of these B7 RS4s. A friend of mine's got one. And the interior has not aged well.
No, but it's better than a 996.
We drove that 996. Remember that one, which I should have bought.
Yes,
another should have.
The one that got away.
Life.
Yeah, so many of them.
Did the B7 only come in manual?
Yeah.
Well, that's also fantastic. Mm-hmm.
There were no rattles or squeaks in that 996.
That's also true.
But that Audi was really awful, terrible.
Okay. But Audi generally make good interiors, so that it should last. If it's especially at £20,000, I'm telling you, it's a good one. It's a low mileage, good car.
My friend has an A3 from 2011. And it is awful.
Should we throw him another option?
Yes, I was going to do that. You want something that's fun. You want something that kind of blends in, a little bit innocuous, because people like to vandalize stuff in London.
Do they?
Mm. Especially if it's parked out on the street. You want something that just blends in, just looks like another car.
Mm-hmm.
Lexus ISF.
Oh, God.
Mm. I like it.
Lexus, and also the wife will probably feel more at home in the Lexus. Because when you're not driving it fast, it just floats along like another IS.
It's also automatic, so
it is automatic.
You're going to drive it in London. We know, and we know what London traffic is like. Oh my!
What about God.
This listener is clearly an enthusiast. This owner is clearly an enthusiast. Has chosen two cars that are manual.
I'll give them another one.
Yeah,
E46 M3 BMW M3.
Nice choice.
One.
Yeah, good car.
Cool car.
Lovely car.
Yeah. Also, they're not quite the hijack risk over there as they are here.
Yeah, but you can't compare it to a B7 Avant. I mean, the Avant is just going to be...
No, it's just
cooler. I mean, it's a V8, four-wheel drive.
The BM's got one of the most amazing straight-six engines ever made. It revs to 8250.
That is a fantastic car.
It is. I'm not saying it isn't.
They both rev to 8250, actually.
So I've driven an example.
For me, it would come third after those three.
Really?
I think, look, if you're not worried about the image of it, I think the Continental GT is not a bad idea.
Is that really in that price bracket?
Yeah, it is. And so I'll tell you what else there is.
Isn't that crazy on service costs?
You want something that will appreciate as well. Do you see a Bentley Continental GT?
I don't see anything really appreciated. So I think that's the wrong reason to buy a car. But
I don't think the Audi will.
And possibly an Aston DB7, I think, is similar money.
Really?
Yeah, the six-cylinder.
No ISOFIX.
None of them have ISOFIX.
What happens if you could just wear that thing like from the hangover?
Yeah, what is
that straps the baby to you?
Exactly. That's what
you got to get the sunglasses as well.
Instead of the pram, you get one of those things that you hang over the wife.
And then you don't even need a baby seat because you can put the baby in front of you. And put the seatbelt through.
Baby carrier solved a lot of our problems. So, yeah.
Is that
don't
legal?
Need a pram.
Can
Absolutely.
You do that in a car?
No.
Have you got a baby carrier?
Yeah, of course we do.
I want to see a photo of this.
Brilliant. I'll find one. I wanted to say that I've driven an example of both an E46 M3 and a B7 RS4 in the last 12 months, I would say. Both fantastic cars. The E46 is a known quantity. Everyone's always raved about them, and for good reason. That engine is absolute peach. The interior is beautifully driver focused.
I'd say it's better than the Audis chassis. As well.
Yeah, lovely chassis. I love that car. I thought it was actually brilliant. What I was quite surprised about the RS4 is, given its age, how good it was. I really enjoyed driving it. It's a lovely engine. It's quite a hefty manual gearbox, but M3, if I had to choose between the two.
Look, I've never driven the B7. I actually really, I think, doing myself a disservice.
I really want to drive one. I'm thinking of a sedan B7, so he's put the Avant into the mix. That makes it tough.
Yeah. Avant is cool.
The Avant is just too cool.
And that will probably appreciate more than...
They were quite rare.
I think they're depreciation proof. I wouldn't say they'd appreciate.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Keep it for long enough.
Maybe.
But a 996 at 20K, you'll probably get a cracker, huh?
Yeah, you still have a Porsche, and that's cool.
So here's the thing. But this is exactly my debate, is you're sitting along the middle road of what's practical and what's fun, and they probably straddle exactly the opposite sides of that line. So the question is, if he just feels like going out for a drive at night, which one will be enjoying more?
Yeah, he'd
probably
want
the 996. It probably is.
We overlook the Porsche sports because we've all had Porsches or have Porsches, and if he hasn't before,
in other words,
it's a real treat.
Yeah. It is.
I expect the RS4 to be great up until 7 or 8 tenths, and then it's kind of going to start falling apart. So whereas the 996 is a real sports car, it's going to start coming into itself as the speeds rise, as the cornering loads.
So what we're saying is we really haven't helped him.
Yeah, we haven't helped him because actually, I must admit, it's very tight. I personally. B7.
I'm going to say, personally, go and drive the best ones that you can for that money, whatever they are, and choose the one that on the day ticks the boxes for you and makes you smile.
I would say go check out a 996, but not the C4. I'd say try and find the nicest C2 you can get.
Good advice. I agree with that.
And
but the C4 looks better.
No, that's
a wide body.
The C4S is
that's what he
spectacular.
Said. C4S, huh?
Yeah,
and
it's
a good looking car.
And you saw that picture of the black one that had the lights blackened at the top, so it looks like a 993 Prestige panel.
Did it have a Monster Energy sticker on it as well?
No, it didn't.
All right, cool. Tom, what do you say?
So I'm going for go find yourself a nice clean 996 C2, drive it. If you want something with a little bit more practicality and you want to blend in and you want your wife to enjoy driving it when she does, maybe go check out the Lexus ISF.
I got a curveball. C4S convertible. Okay.
Ooh. Nah.
Okay. Not sure about that.
I think so.
It's easy to put things in and out.
Yes, it is.
It is.
like a bucky. Almost.
And for a lovely London summer's day, what a
treat. So for me, a traffic jam.
My summary is that I'm still struggling with the very same question. I haven't solved the problem yet. But an M3 is not an option for us in South Africa from a practical point of view. In London, I think it really is, and it's something that could have definitely ticked all my boxes. So maybe drive that as well as the other two and see which ones appeal.
And a Bentley.
And the Bentley. Just for a laugh.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Enjoy
good luck.
The kiddo.
Yeah. Let us know which one you choose. Yeah.
And send pictures of the prospective cars.
And the baby, says Paige.
Yeah. Okay, producer Paige.
Next question, Tom.
Do we have time for another question, Paige?
One more.
We've got one more. Okay, this one is kind of cryptic.
Mm.
It's a story, and I had to praise it. So bear with me, all right? There's this man called Brent Lindeke.
Lindeke sounds right.
Lindeke.
Where in South Africa it's Lindeke?
Lindeke.
Is it?
Like barbecue.
That's exactly it.
Anyway, Brent decides, because he has a flat tire, he goes to four ways. Says they don't have stock of the tire that he has on his car. So he has to go with Pirelli and replace not one, but all of them. Otherwise, Discovery would not cover him if there was an accident.
What?
Then Brent was told that he had to get a more expensive derivative of Pirelli tire to appease Discovery's strict rules regarding tires. So he had to pay extra on top of already upgrading.
Is this a true story?
Yeah, this is a true story. Then Brent hit up Discovery on social media, and Discovery said this was a lie. They have no such rules about brands or mixing tires. So basically, the tire dealer was trying to
upsell him.
So anyway, long story short, the tire dealer then phoned back and said, listen, I lied.
Really?
Yeah. I can give you back your tires. Come back in and we'll sort it out. And he was like, no, I've got my tires now. I paid for them. The car is, safe. I've got new rubber on them. But he's basically just saying, guys,
watch out.
This is what's happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a law-abiding citizen who just wants to have a safe car and wants what is best for your car.
Yeah, look, I think the tire guy started with something and just grew it into rubbish.
Yeah.
And I think there is something that...
There's a grain of truth there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of truth in that. I think tires on the same axle need to match each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to do with different tires having different traction.
And treads.
And tread.
So you've got two Yokohamas up in the front.
Yeah, you want them to wear at the same rate.
And you've got two Dunlops at the back.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
So apparently... the tires, if they are replaced different, so if one goes on the same axle, and I've even heard this comment around all four, if they're different wears, that they can affect the drivetrain on four-wheel drive cars, or the gearbox, let's call it the diffs and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And it can cause vibration that can actually damage the cars. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but I've had... At a tire dealer saying, oh no, this thing, it can't be plugged. It's a problem. It's all this. The reality of it is, check out before you act on a tire dealer's recommendation, just do a little bit of investigation into it.
It's like going to a doctor, get a second opinion.
Yeah, there is a chance that you could just simply plug it. If it's not on the sidewall, I mean, don't go, I'm not an expert, but it doesn't necessarily mean all four tires have been changed.
Sure. But on the whole different tires on the same axle thing, I think the most practical example is if you're going from dry onto wet, different tires, different treads, and different manufacturers will deal with water differently. So you got one tire that can disperse water and is very good in the wet, and the other that isn't. I think the car would have a tendency to kind of rotate not nicely. And that's why they insist on having the same tire.
Well, I think your braking performance would be affected by that.
What I wanted to say is, in any industry in modern times, there's opportunity to be unscrupulous, and probably for the consumer, the best advice is to be forewarned is forearmed. I mean, TireRack.com, BlackCircles.com, they're very good websites. There's plenty of resources to teach yourself. In not very complicated terms about tires, you know, someone has to take time to read it. But, yeah, I mean, a little bit of information goes a long way. So, yes, the tires, and I think it is an insurance clause that the tires across an axle need to match.
Mm.
But the tires on the different axles do not.
Mm.
So there was something in what the tire dealer was saying was, well, this one's flat. We perhaps they were both extremely worn. Putting a brand new tire on the flat side and leaving the old worn tire was probably a bad thing, particularly if they couldn't replace it like for like with manufacturer. So buying two is a distinct possibility. Buying four, I don't understand it, unless the other two were also, you say all four tires were worn, you know, then perhaps a recommendation to replace all four would have been okay. Then what to say to Mark, cars with limited slip differentials do have a problem with, and very sensitive traction control systems do have a problem with different tread depth on different tires. So depending on the percentage difference between the two tires, if it's beyond a certain difference in percentage, then you do have to replace the two.
Yeah.
Because it can not only keep the limited slip diff slightly locked because of the differential turning of the different size tires, but it can also fool the traction control system. So there is something to that. And of course, in the end, you're reliant on someone, a dealer, or perhaps a tire dealer that you trust. And that's not necessarily the easiest thing to find.
You're very knowledgeable about tires.
Yep.
I'll give you that.
I try.
In the end, just question everything.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's true for anything.
And I think, and I mean, as we said before on the show, the internet is your friend, you know, from restoring or, you know, mechanical faults to tires. A quick Google will make you a little bit more enlightened about what's happening.
There's usually time, even at the tire place, to quickly whip out the phone and have a quick look. Yeah, check it out.
But, I mean, just beware. It's not cool to have to spend more money than you need to, especially when things are tight now. So, thanks for the letter. I think it's very informative.
Perhaps familiarize yourself with the insurance clauses for your insurer. Mm. Go through those reams and reams of documents that they send you, because sometimes they've got surprises.
That's true. And, again, for all you listeners out there, if you have questions or queries or just want to, you know, say what's up, you can hook us up on Instagram at @cargumentative. Hashtag Cargumentative, and on Twitter, just hashtag Cargumentative. We'll be able to help you out
soon.
Maybe you'll get a shout out on the show. Very exciting. Guys, awesome. I think that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Thomas Faulkner, good to be back. Guys, thanks for joining me again in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Tom.
Sure thing. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Cargumentative. We'll be right back.